Is baptism a mere symbol of rebirth? Is it a prize for attaining a certain amount of faith? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for May is Lutheranism 101, Holy Baptism. It's written by regular guest Pastor Charles Lehman. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Lutheranism 101, Holy Baptism by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Lutheranism 101, Holy Baptism.
I also think equally that it's a no-brainer that the institution of marriage should not exist. So that causes my brain some trouble. And part of it, why it causes me trouble, is because fighting for gay marriage generally involves lying about what we're going to do with marriage when we get there.
That's Masha Gessen. She is a lesbian activist, an author, and a journalist. Speaking last year, saying something that you don't often hear said, at least in public, and that is for those who consider themselves to be proponents of same-sex marriage, the end game is not same-sex marriage, but the end of marriage itself. Now, few have said this, but she has, and we're going to be hearing more from what she has to say and getting some reaction from Dr. Jennifer Roback Moore. She's a regular guest, founder and president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Is Masha Gessen telling us anything that we hadn't already guessed?
Well, you know, I think those of us who follow this issue closely knew that this was the case. You know, we both knew that some of the people wanted this outcome, and we both knew that this was the very likely outcome, actually the likely outcome. But I think for people who are not paying close attention, people who are just kind of getting snippets of information about the impact, the likely impact of genderless marriage, I think it was big news for those people, you know. So now at last I can say, you know, look, some gay activists say that changing marriage is no big deal. Here's a gay activist who says that it's going to be a huge deal. Surely you won't call me homophobic if I say that they can't both be right, and that I think the person who says it's radical is more nearly correct, that Masha Gessen is more likely, her forecast is more likely to be correct than, say, some of the activists who say that it's no big deal. She's got the more accurate forecast, in my view. So I'm not surprised. But I think the average person in the pew, the average person sitting in front of their computer screen, this probably is news for them.
Here's more of Gessen's explanation of the role that, as she says, a lie plays in the proponents of same-sex marriage.
We lie that the institution of marriage is not going to change. And that is a lie. The institution of marriage is going to change, and it should change. And again, I don't think it should exist. I don't like taking part in creating fictions about my life. That's sort of not what I had in mind when I came out 30 years ago.
What's your response there, Jennifer?
Well, when she says she doesn't like creating fictions about her life, if you listen to further information about her, you know, she's talking about the fact that she is involved with the rearing of several children, and that amongst them they have five parents, and she wants some legal structure that recognizes that quote unquote reality of her life and her children's lives. That's what she means when she says realistic. She means a child can and should have three, four, five parents. That's her idea of realism. And that, I think, is the most telling thing that people really need to know about. In other words, what they really want, what she wants and what people like her really want, is for the law to conform to their desires and their beliefs about reality. They do not want to conform themselves to the biological reality that every child has two parents, and that those two people, whoever they are, owe some responsibility to one another and to their child, right? That's the thing that they don't consider realistic and that they want to change and undermine. And so if you, you know, again, if you listen to, you know, and read further what she has to say, the way those kids end up with five parents is that people move in and out of adult sexual relationships, and they want the legal system to simply adapt and connect with that. And I say that the only reason the legal system has any interest in marriage at all is to create stability for children, to create something that's realistic from the child's point of view, not from the adult's point of view. Adults need to conform themselves to reality for the benefit of children and for the benefit of others, not that we make the whole society conform to the adults and what they happen to currently think that they want.
It's a pretty profound statement, and I imagine even the favorable audience that was listening to her make these statements, we'll hear more from her in a few minutes, along the lines of what you were just discussing. It's a pretty profound statement to say, I don't think it should exist. I mean,
yep.
Marriage. It's one thing to say, I think it should change. I think it should adapt. I think it should, to use her parlance, kind of reflect the reality of whoever's life wants to define it, be defined by anyone in any way they see fit. But to say it shouldn't exist goes far beyond anything I've heard any other proponent of redefining marriage say.
Well, you know, a few years ago, there was that statement called Beyond Same-Sex Marriage that was signed by a number of prominent people. And when that came out, we thought, oh, my gosh, this is going to be a killer. This is going to be the death knell to the whole movement because people are going to look at this and say, see, these radicals, really, they really don't want marriage. They don't want any kind of structure. But, you know, they just kind of glided by the public. You know, nobody got the significance of that. But the reality is here, I think, Todd, is we're dealing with something that really is, in a sense, a theological issue, okay, which is that somebody like Masha Gessen and others like her, they think that any constraints, any structures are all bad, right? So if you have two vertical bars in front of you, all they can see with those two vertical bars is that they are a jail cell, you know, that they represent a jail. But the truth is that two vertical bars could be holding up your house. That could be reinforcement bar. It could be something providing structure that is constructive and helpful. And what we're dealing with here, I think, is a very extreme form of what would be called in earlier days antinomianism, right? People who are not against just unjust laws. Antinomianism means against law. So they're not just against unjust laws or a particular set of law. They're against law as such, because all law is binding and constraining to the individual, and they think they'd be happier and more free if there were no laws at all. And I'm saying you need some structure. You need some constraints. Some constraints, some structures actually are constructive and helpful.
We'll take a break. When we come back, more with Dr. Jennifer Rovach-Morse.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I'm going to be making the case that postmodernity, rather than dying and going away, has actually become the default setting for the way people think in many of the churches today.
Chris Roseborough, on his presentation, Postmodernism in the Church, at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois.
As a result of it, it constitutes a significant threat against biblical, historic, Orthodox Christianity because its epistemology is extremely irrational, subjective-based, and in fact, it's even a form of enthusiasm, God withinism, that at the end of the day has as its project the eroding away and deconstructing of what historic Christianity teaches and confesses.
You can find out more about the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois, at issuesetc.org.
I have three kids who have five parents, more or less. And I don't see why they shouldn't have five parents legally. I don't see why we should choose two of those parents and make them into a sanctioned couple.
That again is Masha Gessen. She's a lesbian activist, an author, and a journalist, making the case that, or trying to make the case, that her particular situation ought to be normative for everyone. Really, what she's actually saying, and she's quite honest about it, is that marriage, by any definition, ought not to exist. And she's one of the few, perhaps we could say, truly honest advocates for same-sex marriage or just the abolition of marriage altogether. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest for the remainder of this hour. Let's go to the phones and see what Kevin in St. Louis has to say. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I just wanted to make the comment that if the critic of marriage, who thinks marriage should be abolished, thinks that that would be good for women, she has not been paying attention to the sexual revolution. That's been awful for women, and the abolition of marriage would be catastrophic. I don't know what – she's just not paying attention.
Kevin, thank you very much. Thanks for listening in St. Louis. Jennifer, your reaction.
Well, I think that your listener is exactly right, that the sexual revolution has been a disaster for marriage and for women, and it's been a disaster for marriage. But the point of marriage is to provide protection for women and children, because the pregnant woman, the fertile woman, is actually quite vulnerable. And this is something that people right and left in our society do not want to see, because, you know, the left wants women to be equal with men, and the right wants women to be individuals, you know. And so in neither case can we really fully appreciate the interdependence of men and women that is at the heart of baby making, and the fact that a pregnant woman, a nursing woman, a mother of small children is vulnerable and needs help and support. And so Masha Gessen wants that support to come from the government, and wants it to not be particularly connected in any kind of obligatory way to the particular people who brought the child into existence. That obligation is what chafes, I think, and what makes people think that they're unfree. So by busting up the institution of marriage, you're leaving vulnerable women to have to take care of kids basically on their own. And even if you do pump in a lot of government money, it doesn't take the place of having a personal relationship with a father and husband. And that's what we already know from the whole experience of the sexual revolution and the whole experience of out-of-wedlock childbearing, single mothers by choice, divorce and remarriage, all of these things that we've already experimented with. You know, we already see that these things have been harmful to women and children. And so I think your listener has made a very good point. And activists like Masha Gessen are either somehow insulated from that, and so they can't see it, or they, I don't know, maybe she sees it and doesn't care. But I think most likely they don't see the full impact and the full weight of what they're advocating. It doesn't fall on the educated people. It doesn't fall on the well-to-do people. It falls more heavily on people of modest means, you know, who are preoccupied with making a living and taking care of their kids, and that takes up all of their time and energy. And the idea of having to struggle to define who counts as a parent in the first place, and who gets to be with the child, and who gets to spend time with the child, and who has to spend time with the child, and who has to pay, and all of those things that are going on in the family courts now, that stuff will be multiplied many-fold if people like Masha Gessen have their way. It will be multiplied many-fold, and people will not be more free and will not be better off as a result of it. I think we know enough now to know that that's true.
We heard earlier a kind of short explanation of Masha Gessen's, what she considers kind of a normative arrangement in her own life. Here's a longer explanation of her, I will call it for the sake of lack of a better word, family arrangement.
I got married in Massachusetts to my partner, who's Russian, my ex-partner. And by that time, we had two kids, one of whom was adopted and one of whom I gave birth to. We broke up a couple of years after that, and a couple of years after that, I met my new partner, and she has just had a baby, and that baby's biological father is my brother, My daughter's biological father is a man who lives in Russia. And my adopted son also considers him his father. So the five parents break down into two groups of three who have two different citizenships. And really, I would like to live in a legal system that is capable of reflecting that reality. And I don't think that's compatible with the institution of marriage.
Well, if you can follow it, Jennifer, what's your response?
Well, look, at the reality that she's talking about is, first of all, divorce and remarriage multiple times. Okay, so we've got two so-called marriages in there. And three women total, and two sperm donor fathers, okay? And what I want to say about that, first of all, is that I just want people to notice that it's the triumph of the will over nature here. In every case, it's the triumph of the will. We want to be together. Now we want not to be together. So since we don't want to be together anymore, there will be new people in the child's life. And so somehow we want to bring those new people into the child's life. And somehow we need to have a legal system that is flexible enough and complex enough that it can acknowledge all of these new people that are coming into the situation. So stability is not part of the picture. You know, it's the honoring of the adult desire. So that's the one piece of it. The other piece of it is that the men involved, the two sperm donors, I think it's laudable up to a point that they have a relationship with those sperm donors, okay? But in point of fact, there is no necessary reason in the brave new world that these guys are advocating for and creating. There's no necessary reason why the sperm donor has to have any relationship at all with the parent, with the mother or with the child. In fact, in most cases, they don't have any relationship with them. You know, it's also nice that they get along, but in the brave new world that they're bringing into being, a lot of times they're not going to get along. You know, a husband and wife have trouble getting along all the time. Now you've got five people who somehow have to be getting along with one another and who have to somehow be working together. And, you know, it's only going to take one of those people to decide they're not happy with the situation to bring the state right into the middle of that home. Or homes, it sounds like it may be more than one home, more than one location where people are living. I can't tell from her description. But it only takes one person to be discontent for the whole thing to come under the jurisdiction of the family courts. And then nobody will be free. You see what I mean? Then the state will be deeply involved in every aspect of it. So she's painting a very nice, sanitized picture of the situation. But in fact, the odds of that being the norm, it seems to me the more people you pump into it, the less likely it becomes that that's going to be a stable, normalized type of situation.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is an article that you have written for The American Thinker recently, and you've said this, and I want you to explain it. You say, when the gay lobby says gay marriage is inevitable, what they're really saying is what? What are they really saying?
What they're really saying is, we have the money, we have the power, get over it. We're going to do what we want. That's what they really mean. And that's becoming increasingly clear as you look around at the state legislatures around the country where, in Rhode Island, for example, there was one registered lobbyist on the side of natural marriage and 12 registered lobbyists in the House side of the bill and 18 registered lobbyists in the Senate side. Going for gay marriage, okay? So when they say gay marriage is inevitable, you have to ask yourself, well, gee, if it's really so inevitable, why do you need 18 lobbyists to make the inevitable thing happen? The truth is, what they mean is that they are going to get what they want by any means necessary, and the rest of us should, you know, just sit down and shut up and go back to watching NASCAR or whatever. It seems to me what they're saying.
But if they have the money and they have the power, with only about 30 seconds here, Jennifer, is it as good as inevitable?
Well, you know what? I don't know what to say about that. And in other words, they're getting the law changed in state after state by one vote. And I just want you to think about that. You're changing the most basic social institution of society by one vote. And somehow we're going to rearrange all of society to remove gender and to remove the presumption of stability and to remove all of these other relationships that depend on marriage to undermine all of that by one vote. And so I think that the verdict of history is going to come down very hard on the people who have chosen to use their power in this way.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You'll find out more about the Ruth Institute under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jennifer, thanks.
Thanks, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get a follow-up from Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of Get Religion on the media coverage of Kermit Gosnell's trial, and we'll talk with Molly about a mixed religion angle on the Benghazi whistleblowers. Folks, I challenge you to find another media outlet that will spend 2 hours discussing issues like today. We talked about the activists for same-sex marriage. We talked about skeptics of Darwinism from within the naturalist camp, and we talked about the evening prayer Compline. That's a pretty wide breadth of topics that we cover here on Issues Etc. And if you appreciate it, please consider making a special Easter gift to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. No gift is too small. And for any size donation before Pentecost Sunday, the 19th of May, we'll send you recordings of 2 sermons. One I preached on the Ascension of Christ and the other on the day of Pentecost. You can make a secure online contribution, issuesetc.org, or you can send us your check made out to Issues Etc. Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember to listen to Lutheran Public Radio right now for 90 continuous streaming minutes of Ascension hymns. Thanks for listening.
Weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.